What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast, episode 49, Rodeo and Sports Medicine for April 17th, 2013. This week, our special guest is Jace Duke from the Methodist Hospital System. I am, of course, am your host, Jeremy Jackson. With us today is...
Daisy.
Claudia.
Susie.
Monica.
Priscilla.
Leslie.
Kayla.
Crystal's mic still isn't working. Lodi's taking pictures. And Karen is doing the audio control. If you want to join our conversation, you go to todaysmeet.com/sportsmedicinebroadcast, or you can use the social feature on Ustream. So you can go to Ustream, and then the link to that is on sportsmedicinebroadcast.com. There's a link that you can listen live there, or go to the Ustream version of it if you want to do that. So real quick, before we get to Jace, a little bit about him. He's the operations coordinator at Methodist Athletic Training Services for the Methodist Hospital System. He's been in the profession as an athletic trainer for about 11 years. And, you know, we talk about GHAT sponsoring the CEU events. And I don't know, I think you can see it. Susie's wearing her GHAT shirt today because she went to the GHAT workshop this year. But Jace was a past president of GHAT and has received a couple different awards from the Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society, the Bobby Gunn and the Tom Wilson Award. So he's a big award winner. And then obviously the reason we have him here is because he's the captain of the Rodeo Houston Sports Medicine team. So he's going to be talking all about sports medicine and rodeo here in Houston. Before we get that, I already mentioned the CEUs. If you want to get some CEUs for listening live or joining in, you can go to sportsmedicinebroadcast.com and it has a link to how you can get that. So the CEU FAQs or whatever it says on there. All right, you guys ready? You know how we're going to start. Daisy?
I ate the school's breakfast today.
What was it today?
Biscuit again.
Sausage or biscuit?
Yes.
Apple juice, orange juice? Apple juice? Mm-hmm. All right.
I ate a strawberry yogurt and a granola bar.
Strawberry yogurt, granola bar. Very good. Susie?
I ate the school's breakfast.
School's breakfast. Jace, what did you have for breakfast?
I'm bad. I skipped breakfast. So.
Oh, Jace.
Bad.
My mom made some protein shake. I don't know what it was for Weight Watchers, but it was really good.
All right, good.
I ate a chocolate bar.
Good.
Strawberry granola bar.
All right.
The school's breakfast and orange juice.
Nice.
The school's breakfast and an orange juice.
Crystal, what'd you eat? Nothing. Nothing? Oh, the same. So that's a school breakfast. Lodi? You had what?
A glass of milk.
A glass of milk? Better than nothing. Better than nothing. All right, so we're doing much better than we've done previously, whereas we were like 70% no breakfast. Now we're eating, I think, 100% of everybody has to have something for breakfast, at least a glass of milk, except for our special guest, Jace. Jace, we're going to have to coach you up on that. So, all right, last week we talked to Dr. Bird about sleep. We talked about turning your phones off an hour or more before you go to bed, not looking at the computer screens before you go to bed, not laying in bed all day. And we're going to go around the horn backwards this way, starting with Kaylin. Have you made any changes as far as your sleep hygiene, like you said? So either not laying around in bed all day, not napping so close to dinner time, not eating late, or any of those things that he talked about. Any changes for your sleep patterns?
No, because I've been sick, so all I've been doing is sleeping.
What about the phone, though? You still been playing with the phone right before you go to sleep?
Yeah.
Yep. All right. Leslie?
No.
No changes?
No.
Priscilla?
No.
Monica?
No.
Susie? No changes? No.
I fell asleep at work.
I slept less.
You slept less? Well, instead of the 12 hours?
Yeah.
All right.
No.
No? Well, I did try the not sleeping or not reading, because I'll read the Kindle in bed and then go to sleep. I did try going to the living room and reading, but that was, maybe it was just coincidence, but that was a terrible night's sleep for me. So I didn't look at the computer screen for over an hour before, and then I read the Kindle in a different room and then went and laid down, and I just terrible night's sleep. But I have been trying to make sure the computer screens, the phone screens were off at least an hour before bedtime, and I'm not sure if that helps or not, but my beautiful wife, she was sick last night, so we were up and down, so looking at the screen was not is irrelevant because we got up a couple times because she was sick. So can't talk about my sleep hygiene last night. So, all right, Jace, what do you think about looking at screens right before we go to bed?
I think it does make a difference. I mean, you know, the bright screen or watching TV, you know, it's bad habits. You know, but, you know, I don't eat breakfast either, so, you know, I have a bunch of bad habits. So. my biggest sleep change is we have a three-year-old that apparently likes to sleep with us now, so she takes up the majority of the bed. So that's what I get to deal with, to sleep with. So
does she start the night in the bed with you, or does she start in her room and then
no,
migrate?
She's you know, it's a lot easier for her just to start with us. You know, she was sick over Christmas, so she got in the habit of starting to come to our room, and now it's just, you know, a fight to put her to bed. So, you know, we just gave up and just let her sleep with us and go to sleep. So we have, you know, going to bed earlier, not watching TV. You know, I do feel a lot more rested in the mornings as opposed to staying up late watching TV now. So,
but all right, that'll work.
Alrighty, can you give us some background on your hometown and college?
Yeah, I grew up in a small town in northeast Texas called Orr City. It's about 4.5 hours north of here, between Longview and Texarkana, I guess is the best way to put it. There were a whopping 800 people in my town, and one red light. It was a blinking caution light when we first moved there, and then they changed it to a red light. So, being from a real small town to living down in this part of the country in Houston, and it was a big change. We didn't have an athletic trainer growing up, so we had sports that I was involved with, and decided to go to college. I went to East Texas Baptist University in Marshall, and another small college is about 1,900 students at the time, and it was a great opportunity, a great education for me.
Can you tell us how you became an athletic trainer?
As I said earlier, when I was in high school, we did not have an athletic trainer on our campus. We had an outreach athletic trainer that came out, you know, once every 2 weeks, 3 weeks, something like that, and I had no idea what it was, who they were when they showed up. We'd see them and that kind of stuff. But during my seventh grade year, I played football and I played basketball. I always joke, the guy that I played behind in football just retired from the Cowboys. So I didn't see a whole lot of playing time. He was about 6'2 and about 300 pounds in the seventh grade, and was an athlete. And everybody knew it from then that he was something special. Unfortunately, I was short and round as well, and not the most athletic individual. And we had an offensive line coach that was kind of our injury coach, I guess is the best way to put it. And he asked for some help during track season and started doing that. Went to a camp that summer, fell in love with it, and decided that's what I was going to do. And ever since then, I mean, that was, you know, golly, I was, like I said, in the seventh grade, and been doing it ever since, and lived it, loved it, and you know, did every aspect of it. My sister was a year ahead of me in school. She would take care of the girl sports, and then I did all the male sports, and we actually went to college together, and we're in the training program there as well. She did not decide to go into this as a profession, but like I say, it was where I got my start.
All right, so Bill was kind of did the same thing. He was in middle school, and he started helping out with the high school. What did you, and you said you had an outreach athletic trainer, what did you actually, what were your responsibilities as a student athletic trainer?
You know, it's funny. I always tell people, when I started in the junior high, I would work with the junior high sports, and I also did the majority of my stuff was at the high school. We were a small school, so, you know, you went down one hallway, you were in the elementary, you went down another hallway, you were in the junior high, you stepped outside, there was the gym, the field house was next to that, and then the high school was right next to that, and it was all, like I say, in one row. We shared a cafeteria, we shared a library. So you had constant interaction with seniors to kindergartners to everybody being intermingled. When you're talking to a high school with 200 students in it, you know, in a campus with, you know, maybe, you know, 500 students total, everybody knows everybody. So my responsibilities were a lot, you know, of things that most student athletic trainers get to do, except for not having a professional like Bill and Jeremy on your campus to show you what to do. It was a lot of, you know, camps and reading and trial by error. I mean, I taped, I you know, did that kind of stuff for us. So the coaches, we had five coaches on our campus for 7th grade through 12th grade. So they didn't have a whole lot of time to do practice prep stuff. I, you know, coolers, water breaks, you know, doing that kind of stuff. You know, I always laugh that one of the big things that my responsibility was every day was, you know, I cleaned the locker rooms after everybody left. And that was, you know, sweeping the floors, mopping the showers down, and I didn't know any different. I thought that's what I was supposed to be doing. So whenever I started my career and I had students and I'd ask them to sweep and they'd look at me like I was crazy, you know, it didn't set right because I thought that's what you were supposed to do. So I was lucky when I was I was trusted to do a lot of things. So all the ordering and all that stuff I was doing in high school. And I would sit down with the vendors from, you know, the different companies when they come in, and I was the guy that was saying, hey, this is what we need, and that kind of stuff by the time I was a sophomore and junior in high school.
So 10th grader, you're, I don't know, what, 15?
Yeah.
16, you're the one responsible for ordering?
Well, I mean, I would say this is what we want, this is what we need, and then a coach ultimately would have to, you know, look over the invoice, but, you know, it was, they knew that was what we needed, so.
Wow, that's quite impressive. We've done a budget project here where they've gone through, and you know, this is the items that we have in inventory, and then the budget where they had to, all right, this is how much money we have, this is what we need, and gone through that. But I don't think their experience is quite as extensive as yours doing it yourself.
Yeah, and like I said, it really helped me, you know, to do that. And when I got out and I was responsible for the actual, you know, budget, you know, and we're talking, you know, at that school at that time, you know, $500-$600 budget too. I mean, you know, it wasn't like we were, you know, setting the world on fire with modalities. You know, we were ordering tape and Gatorade. You know, that was basically what we were doing. So,
gotcha. All right. So you talked about how you became an athletic trainer. Can you tell us kind of your path to becoming the coordinator for? I forget your title.
Yeah, I'm an operations coordinator for, yeah. So whenever I graduated college, I worked in a 3A high school outside of Beaumont. Was there for 3 years and loved every aspect of being in the school setting. Loved the school. Actually, the superintendent that I had in high school had changed jobs and became the superintendent at Hardin Jefferson High School, which is where I ended up out of college. And she, you know, gave me a ring and said that her, you know, knew I was graduating and her athletic trainer was leaving and was wondering if I was interested in coming down. And at that point, I had no clue where Sour Lake, Texas was or anything about it. And I drove down one day and actually drove right through town and drove past the school without even realizing that I was there yet. So I started there, worked there for 3 years. I was the only athletic trainer in the district, and then had when I left my third year, we had 21 students that were working with me and had some great kids. From there, I met the lady that is now my wife. She was working in Baytown, and I was wanting to get closer to her instead of having to commute from Beaumont to Baytown to see her. Or actually, she was living in Clear Lake at the time. So I got a job at Baytown Sterling as the assistant athletic trainer there. Spent 2 years there, and then went to work in the hospital setting at First Memorial Hermann, and I was there for a year. And then we went to work at Methodist, and have been there. September will be starting 6 years.
So both you and your wife are athletic trainers working in the same.
We are. She worked in our department in athletic training services up until about 2 years ago when Methodist started the concussion center. And she now works full time in our concussion center doing neuropsych testing. She deals a lot with concussion patients, but she also gets to work with dementia patients, Alzheimer's patients, and different aspects of neuropsych, the neuropsychology.
All right, and so that would bring us to Kaylin. You ready?
Can you tell us about rodeo sports medicine, how it works?
We got involved in rodeo sports medicine a few years ago and with Rodeo Houston. And we at Houston are a little different than a lot of places. At a generic rodeo or most professional rodeos, there may or may not be sports medicine there. There's probably always going to be an EMT, EMS there. But a lot of the rodeos are covered by a group of athletic trainers and orthopedic surgeons called Justin Sports Medicine. And they cover a lot of rodeos. They can't cover them all. And so Methodist Center for Sports Medicine started covering some local rodeos after we were contacted by Rodeo Houston a few years back to see what we could do to help them out with their rodeo situation. They were going away from using Justin and looking to start their own sports medicine program. So what we've built over the past 3 years is we have a staff of we have about 85 members on our team currently, ranging from orthopedic surgeons to emergency room physicians, massage therapists, chiropractors, x-ray techs, athletic trainers, physical therapists. I know I'm going to leave somebody out.
Yeah, EMTs or anything?
We don't. Right now we work in conjunction with the safety committee, which just has the EMTs that we use in the arena. On any given night, you know, we're going to have 14 to 15 medical professionals at the performances or the contest. And, starts in the mornings. We have a PT clinic that we run where we staff it with sports medicine certified physical therapist that see the athletes, see the workers, anybody that needs to come in, do some rehab, get some treatment. They do that in the mornings. 2 hours before the rodeo starts, we restart, prep for the events. So athletic trainers are there. The primary care physicians, that's the one I forgot. Primary care sports medicine, they handle what we call sick calls. So, if you've ever been down to Reliant in March, there's a lot of dirt down there. And that's a big building to put a lot of dirt in. So after 21 days in that stuff, everybody has some sort of upper respiratory infection. And so our primary care guys get really busy at the end of the week. So, or the end of the rodeo. During the event, we staff it with athletic trainers in the arena, physicians in the arena, athletic trainers in the training room, chiropractors in the training room, x-ray techs, massage therapists, and take care of any needs that may come in.
85 members.
85, yeah. Like I say, we're a committee with the rodeo. It's, you think that's a bunch, and you look at some of these committees that have well over 1,000 people involved in it. There's 29,000 volunteers with the Houston Rodeo, and, this is our first year to be a committee. And we started off as a task force. It was funny. We were the first year they did it. We were contacted on a Thursday afternoon at 3 o'clock to see if we could provide coverage to get this thing up and running. And at that time, we were just doing the athletic training piece. And looked at it, met with the safety committee chair that Friday morning, and the rodeo started Tuesday. So in that 3-4 day span, we ordered every piece of equipment, supplies, everything, put a schedule together, recruited staff to cover. And from that, a lot of the same staff members have continued to join. And now that, it's a committee, there are due structures and things like that everybody has to pay to work the rodeo as a rodeo sports medicine committee member. But that's it's fun to schedule 85 people with, fortunately all I do is I do the athletic trainers and the PTs and the x-ray tech schedules.
someone else handles everyone, and the orthos, and everybody, and the primary care. Okay. Somebody else handles the emergency room physicians and the chiropractors and massage therapist.
You said there's 21 days. Is that right?
Yep.
And how many hours a day?
Well, it depends on who you are. If you're just somebody coming in working the afternoon shift, the performance starts at 6:30. We have everybody there by 4:30. You're usually walking out of the training room around 9. So 4.5 hours each day. I get there in the mornings around 8:30, and I leave about 10:30 at night for 21 days straight. So 13-hour days.
Nice.
Yeah, it's tiring.
So that's what you get for being captain, huh?
That's it. That's it. So I just, you know, I'm the type of person that I don't have to be there that much, but it's one of those things that I'm very particular and want to make sure things run smoothly, and, you know, and I don't want to not be there and something happen and not be able to fix it, I guess is the best way to put it.
Gotcha. So being there, you pretty much see any of the injuries that happen.
How are they different?
Well, you know, it's one of those things that a lot of the injuries that we see are very similar to other sports injuries that we see. Tons of overuse injuries. These guys are most of them have other jobs, and then they do this as fun or on the side. Some of them, this is their career. They do it every day. So their bodies, are taking a beating over a long period of time, and then they're also traveling, they're on the road, so getting medical care and getting seen and getting things taken care of, they don't usually have an opportunity to do that. You think about, our professional athletes that we see, with Methodist being the official healthcare provider of the Texans and the Astros and the Dynamo, we see a lot of those guys, and, they get injured, they have an injured reserve list or disabled list or whatever that they can go on. They're still receiving a paycheck. They're still able to, pay their bills. And as a professional rodeo athlete, you only get paid if you win. So the only way you can win is to compete. So they do whatever they can do to get themselves out there. The thing about the rodeo injuries that is there is you've always got that chance for severe trauma. You've got animal setting on an animal, I guess is the best way to put it. Somebody once said, two of God's creatures trying to get them to do opposite. They're trying to do opposite things with one another. And one's strong-willed and the other one is, just an animal, So trying to figure out how to get those athletes out there and also being prepared for that severe trauma when it occurs.
All right, so leading right into that. You've done this for how many years?
I've just completed Rodeo Houston, the third year of Rodeo Houston.
Third year of Rodeo Houston, so that's, 46 days maybe, 43 days maybe of rodeo. And I'm sure you've seen some of the traumatic injuries. So
we've been very lucky at Houston. The first 2 years, we transported no injuries from the arena out on a backboard, spine board, anything like that. This year, we were a little less fortunate. We actually had to board, I think we boarded 3 individuals this past year. The roughest injuries, the toughest injuries, I guess, that we saw this year were, we see several concussions. One of our athletes was unconscious for about 4.5 minutes. It was a bull rider. Just his head hit the bull's head, and he went to sleep. I told him that I feel sorry for his wife because that sucker can snore. I guarantee you, he was snoring pretty good. We had another one that got knocked unconscious, and then as he's tied, still on the bull unconscious, his elbow got dislocated, had a fractured dislocation of his. Actually his free arm, so this arm got hit by the horn of the bull and bent it in the wrong direction, so he has had to have that repaired. you know, we haven't had the real serious injuries. We actually had the night that the athlete had his elbow dislocated, two riders later, one of my ex-students from Hardin-Jefferson was knocked down, you know, thrown off and stepped on by one of the Bulls, and he got up, walked out of the arena, was fine. I think it's been about a month. He was actually at a rodeo in Arizona, and the same thing happened, except for when that bull stepped on him there, he ruptured his trachea, and he actually got up and walked out, but then whenever both his lungs were collapsed because he couldn't get any air and couldn't breathe, he was life-flighted to Las Vegas. They did a surgery then, repaired his trachea. He texted me the other night and said that everything's looking good and he's planning on getting back on one around July 4th. So I told him he was crazy, but, you know, that's the life that he lives and loves. So.
Wow. Yeah, they wear, like, bulletproof vests.
They do. They
like
do
that.
Have the vest for the bull riders and the rough stock riders. It's just a kind of a flak jacket type thing. You know, but in some of the bull riders wear helmets. There's really, you know, you look at it, it serves the same purpose as a football helmet. It's not going to prevent a concussion. It's not going to anything like that. But what it can do is help prevent that trauma to the face, to the skull. A lot of them look similar to hockey helmets. There's not really a certification process to make them an official bull riding helmet, because no vendor really wants to put that stamp on there, I think. So.
Yeah, I'm gonna wear a bull riding helmet to ride my bike on. Ride my bike on a helmet, yes. Ride my bike
bicycle
with.
Helmet, yeah.
Yes. All right. Anyway, moving on from that. All right. Where are we at?
Are there full-time rodeo sports medicine professionals?
There are, you know, most athletic trainers that do rodeo sports medicine have another job, and they do this as part-time, or some of the Justin sports medicine guys are paid as coordinators. However, the majority of them are just volunteers. What we do see is in the PBR, the Professional Bull Riders Association, they have a group of athletic trainers that travel with them, because their events are hosted in a series. So they're in, you know, one city one night, and they pack everything up and they go to another city and they have another competition there. So those guys that travel with them, there's a handful of them that are employed through the PBR that travel all the time. Or their company is contracted to travel with PBR.
So in general, no, but with the PBR, there's a few.
Yeah, in general, no. And, in PBR, there's a couple.
All right, so we're going to go back to that real quick. You said as a committee, the people have to pay dues. So just as if I wanted to volunteer or work with the rodeo, what would be
that process?
Yeah.
The process is that you have to become a member of the rodeo. The rodeo membership dues are currently $50. And then from that, you would apply to be on a committee. If the committee has any openings and space available, then the hierarchy of the committee, I guess the best way to put it, the chairman of the committee, currently our chairman is Dr. Kelly Larkin. She's an emergency room physician, and she would make a determination to add people or, you know, to accept. Once you're accepted, then you have to pay your committee dues. Our dues currently are $25. I don't know if those are going to change and go up moving forward based on what that does is that pays for different events that we do throughout the year. It also pays for, you know, attire or things like that we wear in the as members of the team. But that's how you would do it. You go to the HLSR website and go to members and apply. Currently, like I say, we have 85 members. I don't know what our, you know, the people that are stepping off or coming on is going to look like. But what I try to do when I schedule is try to get everybody, you know, equal number of nights, try to get everybody three nights at least to work. So it's, you know, you're looking at five, four or five athletic trainers working every night, getting three nights over 21 days is pretty good trying to schedule that. So, you know, having people rotate on and off is our goal. We want to have as many people involved and get the experiences as we can, you know, but at the same time, you also, you know, want to keep the people that have done a good job in the past and been there the opportunity to do it again if they wish. But at the same time, you know, not to make it like, you know, this is our group, you can't become part of our club, and you got to get on a wait list. That's not something we ever want to do.
So if I was a member of the rodeo deal, would I have to pay for parking? Would I have to pay for a rodeo ticket? Would I get to see any of the show or any of the actual rodeo?
All committee members, you'll get a volunteer parking pass, which is good for every day. Now, it might be at an off-site lot, and you have to tram over, but you would have parking for any night that you were working, or even if you were just coming to a show. Once accepted to committee, you also get a committee gold committee men's badge, and that badge allows you and a guest into the rodeo, into the arena, the event, Reliant Stadium, to watch the rodeo, to watch the concerts. You're not assigned a seat. You don't have a ticket number or a seat number, but you can get in the building. You know, and this year was a big deal. They put a caveat on that, except for George Strait. because they were, you know, they didn't, you got 29,000 volunteers times two, you know, and they had 80 some odd thousand people there to see George Strait. They couldn't, you know, let the gold badge people in as well, because they had people that were, you know, wanting to pay. So,
gotcha. So that's a pretty good deal.
It is a perk. I mean, you figure, you know, like our committee, you spend $75. If you were to take, you know, Jeremy and his wife and go to the rodeo and pay to park and buy two tickets, and, you know, roughly if you go twice, you pay for it.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was wondering. Because, I mean, I know parking's pretty expensive, and then the tickets are.
And it is a donation. All that money's, you know, the rodeo money is to raise scholarships, and so it is a, you know, technically, I guess, a charitable donation if you wanted to list that on your tax return. But, you know, it is $75 too.
Hey, cool. And then I know you said you get to go and walk around, but if, say, I'm scheduled to work tomorrow night, am I working back in the training room, or am I on the field?
It depends. You know, what normally I like to do is when I schedule an athletic trainer, the first night they're going to be in the training room. The second night, we like to put them there. We like to put them on the timed event end, so your roping and your steer wrestling and those events on that end. And those events end, you come up and you get to see bull riding at the bucking chute gate. And then the third night just depends on where the need is. So we get some inside the arena experience, some in the training room experience. The main bucking gate crew is usually fairly consistent. It's usually me, Dr. Larkin, and the same is our safety committee liaison person. There to coordinate that gate for, you know, the trauma issues.
Yeah, I understand. You definitely want a good team ready to go on.
Well, it's just you want to make sure everybody's on the same page. Yeah. And having 85 people, it's hard to, you know, get 85 people working together, more or less each night having to redefine, you know, what whose role is what.
Right.
So, you know, it's nice to have that consistency. It's just like working a football game when you have similar ambulance crews at your games. You know, knowing those guys and knowing, you know, how things are going to go, it just makes things a lot easier.
All right. So since we talked about how a professional can be involved, Leslie?
What opportunities are there for student athletic trainers to help or observe?
Right now, currently, we don't offer any observation opportunities. We are looking at how we can work in some things. The training room that we work in at Rodeo Houston is roughly the size of what we're sitting in right now. And you figure you have 14 medical professionals in there at one time, plus the athletes getting care. You know, you could have 30 people in a room like this with exam. You know, we've got four exam tables, two massage tables, a taping table, two chiropractic tables, and, you know, modality carts and all that. So it's kind of cramped space. You know, the other thing about it is the nature of the sport and the things that you see and things like that. It's just with having students in there might not be the best thing to do. These athletes are very gracious. They're some of the most wonderful people you ever meet in your life. But it's I don't know if I would want to have a student in there to see some of the, you know, the possible trauma stuff that came in. That possibility, like I say, I wouldn't be, you know, concerned one bit with the student with the professional athletes or anything like that. It's just the exposure to the possible, you know, catastrophic events.
So currently nothing. I can understand. There's,
you know, it's a safety thing. It's you know, but what we are looking at doing is hopefully either through Rodeo Houston or through Methodist at some point doing a one day student trainer day, something like that at the rodeo, where we can have a conference, have some tours inside things, and of the training room, of the arena, before everything starts, and then have those people be able to you know, go enjoy the rest of the rodeo. Now, pulling that off and getting that done is going to take some time. So, you know, we're just now getting our feet wet in our third year here, and you know, we do. Methodist does cover several other rodeos. We cover the Fort Bend County Rodeo, the Austin County Rodeo, the Crosby Fair and Rodeo during the year. So there are some more opportunities, you know, there, but where it's on a smaller scale. There, it's what we do there is we have a sports medicine trailer that we use for those events, and be more than happy, you know, at that point to have, you know, some students come out and see those, you know, because it's a little less I don't want to say non-controlled, but a little less busy, I guess, right, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, just smaller scale. Start small.
Start smaller scale and a lot less crowded in the facilities.
Gotcha. So if any of y'all are interested in athletic training in the rodeo, then you can get with Jace and we can look at sending just to one of the Crosby one is pretty close.
Crosby's in June. The other two are in October. We're actually picking up Waller this year too, so that'll be, it's in September, October as well. So, you know, which is tough because now you're in the middle of the football season.
Right.
So, you know, at those locations though, we also do very similar to what we do at Houston. We have athletic trainers, we have chiropractors, we have our massage therapists, we have our physicians there. It's just we don't have 14 of them. You know, we may have a staff of 5 or 6.
How has working with the rodeo improved your practice as an athletic trainer?
I think, you know, two things is, one, like I said earlier, it really makes you aware of what's going on and your emergency management skills. The other thing that I think that it really helps with is creativity. Knowing that you got to get somebody back out there and how to get them back out there and expediting their return, but their safe return. You know, I've made more pads and you know, orthoplast protective things. You know, I always tell people I should have been a majored in art, you know, from some of the stuff that we have to do for these guys to make it fit and comfortable for them while they're riding. So I think, you know, creativity and emergency preparedness.
All right, so what are some of the things, just tell me something that you're real proud of that you've been creative about.
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, taping things differently, you know, just because, you know, they've got, you know, things that their hands have to fit in their riggings just right. And those things are, you know, you take a bareback rigging, your hand slides in it at a certain angle, and it won't pull out unless you reverse that angle. So you've got to, you know, crank your elbow down, lift your wrist up, and pull all at the same time. Well, you know, you look at those guys, they don't, you're trying to put something on their hand, if they have a hand injury, that thing's made to fit to them. You know, I mean, they actually add stuff to it to make it tight where they can stick their hand in there, and it won't come out. If you just try to pull it, it won't come out. So you've got to be creative when you're taping things. You know, one of the things that we learned on some of the bull riders with their wrist is they instead of just taping a wrist normally, you can take and roll some tape and build a little block on this side, and you just use the roll tape and do multiple little layers of that block to keep that wrist from deviating. You know, and it's stuff that you look at and go, huh, I could use that. You know, I could have used that with this kid. I've used a lot of TheraBand on hips and on shoulders as a spica instead of using that in conjunction with an ACE wrap, because the problem is, you know, you look at, you know, the TheraBand, if you pull it a certain direction, if you get it in a certain area, the tension on it is going to pull the arm or the leg a certain way. So if you take and you, if you have an athlete that has, you know, problems, you know, adducting their hips back, if you rotate, if you wrap that thing just right, as soon as you lift your leg, it's going to stretch that TheraBand open, you know. Well, so you have a secondary back. We'll use that as an example how we crossed over. They lift their knee up, they open up, but the problem is getting it closed back together. You put that TheraBand on them in a tension, and it actually pulls them back in. They're using that instead of their adductor muscles to pull them back together. So using that on some bull riders and things like that to get their legs in a position where they can ride and be comfortable.
All right, so I'm pretty curious about that. Do you put the ACE wrap on, like, partly, and then
no,
wrap TheraBand in the same?
I do TheraBand first, and then I do the ACE wrap over the top of that. So
it's kind of the same motion. It's just, like, double layering?
Yeah, it's double layering. So, you know, just mainly the ACE wrap is on to keep the TheraBand from coming off, you know, or rolling up, because we know it, you know, it's a little thinner and it rolls, so... but yeah, do it in the same motion. You're not trying to support the thing. You're trying to get the opposite effect of what we would normally do.
Right.
You know, you're not trying to keep that shoulder from dislocating. You're trying to actually, if he lifts his arm up, to make it pull his arm up to get him into a free hand position. So, you know, you would take and put the tension on there, and you'd use the tension to pull him back. So, Dr. or Jack Murphy over at McNeese did a conference on it about 10 years ago that I was at, you know, and it was talking about DBs and things like that with the hips. And so, you know, started using it a little bit and with football players in different sports. And then the rodeo stuff, I've had good success with it, you know, the handful of people I've used it on.
Interesting. Never heard that before. Maybe that's something I'll have to try. So I learn something every time. All right, so
I would recommend using a black or a gray or, you know, something on the higher.
So you can put some good tension on there?
Some pretty good tension on there.
Do you only help people in the show or also people that are at the rodeo?
Well, what we do there is we treat a lot, you know, all the athletes. We treat their families. We treat staff members of the rodeo. And sometimes we get to interact with the entertainers, members of the band. Things like that, if they need something. That's a lot of our primary care guys do a lot of stuff with them. As far as if you're at the rodeo and you sprain your ankle walking around, I will not see you. So that's somebody. That's a safety committee person, and they handle that. If you fall in the arena, that's another group of people. So it's totally separate areas. It's like working a football game. You know, you're working the sidelines, and somebody else is taking care of the people on the grounds.
So I think probably what they're trying to ask is, do you ever get to take care of the artists or their performers?
We have had some interactions with some of the artists for HIPAA violations, and I can't tell you which ones.
Yeah, that's okay. But that's cool. I mean, you get to go, if you're part of the committee, you get to go to the rodeos.
And it's certain, it's, you know, they get taken care of in a different area, and it's, you know, a different pass and a different credential area and things like that, so. Got to be careful who not everybody runs by.
You only get to do that if you're the captain.
Well, no, it's actually, you know, some other people, and it depends on what it is. And a lot of times our massage therapists do a lot of stuff with them.
Yeah. But still, it's an opportunity. Some of you can meet some of the people that you, I don't know, idolize for music or something. So that's pretty cool. So you get to meet a lot of different people, work with a lot of different
Yeah, I think that's you know true about everything that I've done so far. You know, with the rodeo or with outreach and what I'm doing now, it's really opened up different areas, different types of people to work with, and different opportunities. So, you know, I loved working in the schools and getting that sense of community and getting to deal with student athletic trainers and the same students and the same coaches and the same athletes every day. But in the role that I'm in now, you know, getting to work different events and different opportunities, it's really neat to see what else an athletic trainer can do besides what, you know, what we originally thought and what we always, you know, grew up doing.
All right. Daisy, we got anybody commenting on there? Nobody yet?
No.
All right.
Do you ever get scared that the animals may hurt you?
You know, at Houston, we have a protocol in place that we cannot enter the arena until the animal is secure. Now, by secure, that means out of the arena or has enough ropes around it that we don't think it's going to get loose. Mainly, we make sure they get out of the arena. The arena crew does a great job at every rodeo we've worked with the bullfighters to the judges, to just the arena crew to get to the athlete, to keep them still, protect them. But you know, it's just like as we always learn, you know, and you know, you check the scene for safety, and you don't want to get ran over because now there's nobody to take care of somebody if you're down too. So, and you know, I've grown up, I've been around animals and horses and things like that growing up, and it's not a fear of them. It's a respect, I guess, is the best way to put it. You know, they're not going to hurt you unless they feel that they're in, you know, in some sort of predicament. And but like I say, we have protocol in place that I'm not, you know, unfortunately, you know, I've had to sit there and watch a bull rider at Crosby last year just get, you know, pummeled in the corner, and then the bullfighters get pummeled in the corner by the bull because they couldn't get him turned quick enough, and they finally got a rope on him, and I'm standing at the gate at the corner just watching it. I mean, it was right underneath my feet, and you know, it's kind of feeling helpless, but at the same time, one, I couldn't open the gate because there's a, you know, large bull standing in front of it, but two, you know, it wouldn't have done any good if I could have got out there. I'd have gotten injured too. So
wow, so you gotta be prepared for that too, huh?
Yep.
All right, we got one more, and I think we're gonna wrap it up unless there's any others.
Are you planning to do this your whole career?
You know, as we were talking about earlier, it's a lot of fun. It is very time consuming. Those, you know, 21 hour days or 21 days while I'm there puts a strain on me physically from just being tired, and also. I'm away from my family for a lot of times. I have a 3-year-old daughter, and by the time that I leave in the morning and come home at night, she's either at, you know, I drop her off at school, and then I, you know, she's already asleep when I get home. So, you know, missing that and being away is tough. Now, at the same time, it is a lot of fun getting to do it, getting to do different events. You know, if the opportunity's there, I'd love to continue to do it. But you know, you never know. You never know what is around the corner. But like I say, right now, I'll do it as long as I can do it. As long as people continue to want me to do it, and I'm able to do it, I think it's a good thing to do.
This weekend, we took some of our student athletic trainers to the UT High School Student Sunday, and so we went Saturday to Sunday, and I had games on Monday night, so I had 3 days in a row where I pretty much didn't see my wife and my two kids. My wife usually waits up, but I couldn't imagine 21 days of barely seeing my,
you know, I'm able to take her in the mornings and drop her off, and you know, sometimes we sneak some donuts for breakfast, you know, and have daddy daughter donut day, you know, so so that's you know, that is a perk.
Yeah.
I do eat breakfast on those days, though.
So. Nice, healthy donuts.
Only the holes. That's, you know,
oh, okay.
less fat there.
Yeah, yeah. It's better when it's just the donut holes. All right. right. Well, we're going to go ahead and close it out with Claudia.
Of course, we have to mention the people who support us. GHET for supporting the CEU opportunities. Pasadena ISD Education Foundation.
And then, of course, a Methodist Hospital. We got Jace here talking about rodeo, but they've done a lot. I know we're partnered with Memorial Hermann here at Pasadena ISD, but that doesn't mean that they don't do things to help us. And, you know, I worked with Lachelle Brown a lot before we became officially sponsored. And so, you know, I've been working with Richard Gregory. He's part of Methodist as well. And, you know, he's gotten me a couple of different contacts. So definitely thank you, Methodist Hospital, for what you're doing for athletic trainers and allowing Jace to come spend some time with us today. If you want to, I don't have any words of wisdom and we're running short on time. So if you want to contact us, the website www.sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where you can watch live almost every Wednesday, except next week because we have standardized testing. But if you look at what sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, there's a tentative schedule that'll tell you when we're broadcasting live. And then you can click on the live link and follow us live or comment there on the social stream.
Or you can follow us on Twitter at PHS Sports Med or Google Plus Sports Medicine Broadcast or Facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training.
And then, of course, there's the app that's just kind of sitting there if you want to download it and listen to all of them in the one convenient place, or just download it just because you can do that. So for Jeremy,
Daisy,
Claudia,
Susie,
Monica,
Rosella,
Leslie, Kaylin,
Crystal, the rest of the sports medicine class, Jace, and the Rodeo Houston sports medicine team, that's a wrap.